I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Okay, great to be back now on this beautiful June day with Gloucester Times journalist Taylor Ann Bradford. And Taylor, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Rick. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. Are you kidding me? I've been celebrating the Roaring Twenties for about 2 weeks now, so it's it's going great. Fiesta or no fiesta, everything is looking pretty good. We start, I think, with today's Gloucester Daily Times, on which you have several important articles on the front page. And I want to start, I think, with probably the most important. It's a national headline, and it has to do with the passing of something called Juneteenth. And in Gloucester, Massachusetts, in general, will be celebrating Juneteenth, which I think is called National Independence Day. But what's going on locally with respect to that, Taylor Ann?
Yeah, so in commemoration of the ending of slavery that happened 176 years ago, the city is going in line with Governor Baker's announcement that the state will celebrate the holiday of Juneteenth. And so now Gloucester's offices all will be closed on Friday, that is tomorrow, in observance of this holiday, which is celebrated on Saturday, June 19th. So offices will be closed a day prior to the actual holiday. But, you know, I think that, you know, in addition to people getting the day off from work, the holiday is a lot more than just, you know, a day of rest for a lot of people. It's the commemoration, celebration, you know, by Black Americans being able to be free. That, you know, this is something that has, I think, not been publicized or celebrated like it should be within our city or state. And, you know, as Governor Baker announced this year that they're going to commemorate as an actual holiday, this holiday will recognize the need to ensure racial freedom and equality, commemorate African-American freedom, and emphasize education and achievement throughout the city and beyond. And so the actual holiday, Rick, commemorates the freedom of Black Americans in the United States, and it focuses on June 19th, 1865, which I know is at least a couple days ago, if not a couple decades, centuries ago. And Major General Gordon Granger and his Union troops landed in Galveston, Texas, to announce the Civil War had ended and President Abraham Lincoln had freed enslaved people in the rebel states about 2.5 years earlier than when the general came into Texas. And so I was able to speak with Nicole McLean, and she is the kind of founder and the head of the Juneteenth Association for the North Shore. And so her main focus is not only celebrating this holiday and trying to, you know, bring celebrations all around Massachusetts, but also kind of continue that celebration year-round and by raising awareness. So she kind of gave me a little bit more insight to what the history of this holiday was. Because while this one specific date, June 19th, 1865, is really important to note, she said that, you know, the next couple of years after they had heard from the general were even more important to recognize. Because within that order that he announced, they had mentioned that, you know, the people who are recently enslaved would now be employees and employers rather than being enslaved. But while this is great news, they also noted that, you know, they should probably stay with their formerly enslaved enslavers rather than go and be free, because they were concerned that, you know, the police wouldn't support them, all these things. You know, they might not experience the greatest of lives outside of where they had recently been. But McLean, I think, put it pretty simply. She said, you know, but who would want to stay with their abusers? And so, because they had been raped, they had experienced, you know, the most tumultuous experiences. And so they actually had to fight, Black Americans had to fight for an additional 2 years before they're actually set free. And she said that in itself is the significance, is that just the perseverance and resilience and the fight for freedom, of the lives of Black Americans, how it continued to happen, you know, 2 years after, the actual official Juneteenth holiday, but then also how that has continued and how there's continued to be fight even up to today's day and age of just how much people are fighting for freedom, fighting for, you know, justice, racial justice, as we've seen in the past couple of years. And so, you know, McLean's very passionate. It was great to talk with her and just a little bit get that little glimpse of what this holiday is all about, and, you know, how they continue to advocate for freedom and for justice mm-hmm. for all.
Well, given the climate today of today's world and so on, especially in the United States, the tensions, I think it's right on, it's spot on, as they say. And, you know, I got to tell you, in history, I certainly was taught about what the Emancipation Proclamation, and that was the end of it in history books. It was, you know, Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. Never anything else, didn't read about anything else, didn't read about how difficult it was for black people and those who were freed. And so I think this is kind of long overdue. I was just reflecting on that. Yeah, that's the only thing I ever knew was the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, and I appreciate the article and you know, you're bringing it to light here. And there will be, in connection with that, there will be, a sort of a celebration on Saturday for Juneteenth.
Yeah, so there's a couple different things happening in the city. The more public ones that are occurring within Cape Ann are, there's a Juneteenth vigil in Rockport, in the front yard of the First Congregational Church on Main Street, from 11 to 11:45 a.m. And then there's this other one, which I think is, you know, you speak of the tensions that are arising, and I think that this event, the Freedom Rally that is happening in Gloucester, is one of those events, just by, I think, the nature of, you know, a lot of different perspectives coming to the table and wanting to celebrate or raise awareness for different things. And so the Freedom Rally, which will be happening on Saturday from noon to 4 p.m. at Stage Fort Park, is not a Juneteenth celebration as a whole, but it is an event in which they are going to have speakers come and talk about Juneteenth in collaboration and in connection with this other kind of topics that will be discussed. And so really that's kind of a broad explanation of the event. And so let me dive a little bit deeper, Rick, of mm-hmm. kind of what this Freedom Rally is all about, if that's okay.
Sure.
So the Gloucester Republican City Committee organized something called the Freedom Protest Rally, scheduled for Saturday. And, you know, my question was, protest and rally, like, on the Juneteenth day, what is this? You know, what is this protesting? What is this rally about? And I think a lot of people, when they saw that, had that very same question and asked, you know, are they protesting Juneteenth? What's going on? And trying to understand what might be happening. And so I actually was able to talk with committee chair Ashley Sullivan, who had organized the event. And she says, you know, she's been getting a lot of pushback as well because people are contacting her thinking that they're doing this event out of hate and anger, and that the GOP is going after people of color. And she said that is not the case whatsoever, and that the event is actually a nonpartisan event, and that she had been approached by about 40 local families from all different political backgrounds who, as she said, were upset what they were seeing out of local and national government, and so they decided to host an event about it. And I asked her, you know, what are they upset about? Is it Juneteenth? And she said, no, it's not Juneteenth. What these people were concerned about or frustrated was a myriad of things such as recent COVID restrictions that were enabling big businesses but not helping small businesses, mandatory flu shots for kids, and a lot more. And so they had scheduled the event, and when they had realized, you know, after the fact that they had scheduled it for Juneteenth, they decided to, you know, bring that holiday into the fold and celebrate Juneteenth on top of it to honor the holiday and the importance of it. And so I think it's one of those things where there's a lot of different topics and things coming together into one event. And she got lots of pushback, unfortunately. I think there's a lot of pushback about just, you know, people saying, like she has said, that, you know, they're protesting Juneteenth, and she's trying to assure people that they weren't. She made a Facebook post about it. And, you know, there are people from the Democratic City Committee who, you know, still, even after Sullivan had mentioned that, you know, it's not a protest against Juneteenth, they're saying, you know, it feels like that, or that it still is. And so there is a bit contentious here in the city around it, but, I think Sullivan is very adamant that, you know, this is an event for all, to celebrate, to raise voices and awareness about different issues. And we'll kind of see how it goes. I know it'll be Saturday, and there'll be music, there'll be games, there'll be speakers. And so we'll have to see what that looks like. I know there's a couple of different people coming to the event, such as constitutional attorney Mark Rendaza, representatives of Constitution of States, Camp's Constitution, Mass Stands Up, Health Rights MA, and John Paul Morin, and a couple other people as well. And if you do some research on these people, they are a little bit more right-leaning, and so I think that will be interesting to hear their voices and just exactly what they say at the event. But again, from what Sullivan said and from what their community has emphasized, is that this is not a protest, and this is, in fact, a way to bring people together rather than separate people of what it has felt like over the past year. So it'll be an interesting event for sure, and, you know, the only hope, I think, by anybody would be that it stays peaceful and that people can come together on different conversations, or at least communicate and collaborate in conversations, even when they have different viewpoints.
Well, I hope the Times is planning to cover that, because that's going to make some fascinating reading next week for sure. And you have fleshed that out beautifully in the paper, so I encourage everybody to get today's Times either online or in print. Fascinating stories. Let's turn to something a little bit different. When I was instructing a course for teachers, actually I was hosting the course, I wasn't instructing it, called Facts, Fictions, Fable, and Folklore of Cape Ann, I discovered a little cemetery off of Centennial Avenue that I didn't even know was there. There's a little bridge there that if you're coming from the harbor side over toward Washington Street on your left, there's a bridge, and there's a cemetery back there, and I never knew about it. And our class was researching that one day. We were walking around, a bunch of teachers, and we ran into a woman who was tending the lower portion of that cemetery. I want you to tell me about all that, because it's a fascinating story.
Yeah. I think it's a story of fascination and inspiration that unfortunately was born out of vandalism, which I think is the most recent things that have been happening. So the Clark Cemetery, which is off of Centennial Ave, is this historic cemetery that has, you know, so many different people buried there with these beautiful headstones and, you know, commemorating war veterans and people who have been prominent in the city and just family members, specifically the Clark family. And so when Richard and Kathy Clark arrived at this cemetery on Sunday afternoon, they found headstones that had been knocked over and destroyed by what seemed like bricks and metal. And the vandalized headstones, one belonged to Richard's third great aunt. Another one had been, belonged to somebody that, that they had researched and learned a lot about. Were just demolished. There were chips, they were knocked over, split, and pieces were missing. And what made this site such a tragedy is that this couple, along with different volunteers, had been working to restore the headstones that now lie broken on the ground. Richard and Kathy Clark had retired, and they had a condo in Hawaii, and they came one day to visit the Clark Cemetery where Richard's family has been buried. And saw what disrepair things had been like. This is about 6 years ago. And decided to move, and buy a condo on the North Shore and dedicate, their retirement to restoring headstones. And so to see their work just demolished on Sunday just broke their hearts. And so I had the opportunity to walk with them along the cemetery and to talk a little bit about their passion, and just the upsettingness that, cemeteries have become a place of partying for a lot of people. A lot of people do unfortunate things in those cemeteries, they try to encourage people to go elsewhere. But one of the results of partying or other things is that these headstones are being just vandalized and demolished. Richard had mentioned that the restoration, now that these things are ruined, is that to put it back together, to glue it, to prep it, to do all this cleaning of these headstones that had recently been vandalized will take up to 15 to 20 hours, and they've been working, and all the pieces aren't there. When we went to go visit, things were missing. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really unfortunate thing, but I think it only pushes Kathy and Richard to continue to fight for restoration and preservation of land that they love, and then the commemoration of people that have gone before us in the city. And, you know, they have a really great website that I've visited multiple times called Clark Cemetery. And they also advise people going to deadfred.com, where you can research ancestors and people who have the last name of you. And I think especially talking to Kathy, just her depth and fascination with history, I think, was just fascinating. And it's so cool to hear just, you know, we'd be walking and there'd be stones. It's like, oh, you know, like that's Joe Schmo over there, and he's related to her. And just the passion behind it. And then Richard is, you know, the one who is learning how to put the pieces back together and really organizing all of that. And so it's really quite interesting.
It is.
So, but we'll see kind of what they work. And they've been getting a lot of support from volunteers and Department of Public Works and EPA grants. So.
Yeah, we ran into Ms. Clark when we were there, and it was fascinating. She did take us through, and at that time, this was a couple of years ago, it was really overrun. It doesn't look like it does now, you know, with growth and everything. And then we toured the rest of the cemetery, and it is a trip through time. And anybody who is a newcomer to Gloucester, such as I, I've only been here 60-odd years, you know, you go through there, and you see this stuff, and some of the headstones are in the 1600s. And the way they're carved out and the messages on there, and some of the names you'll recognize even if you're not from Gloucester as Gloucester names. It's a fascinating place to visit. Congratulations to the Clarks for doing that. That's an amazing story.
Yeah. So definitely, I think if there was a message, it was to think about the people that lie in cemeteries and think about the people who go there daily to restore the cemeteries. And think twice before you go visit there to do other things rather than just, you know, honor those who are buried to rest there. Because it really is a crime to vandalize those areas, and it's such a terrible thing to see those things knocked over, especially after so much hard work.
Yeah.
So hopefully the Clarks continue to get support and maybe a little less hooligans popping over into their neck of the woods.
All right, so. Finally, Taylor Ann, and I don't want you to get into too much detail on this because we're on a time constraint here, but I do want your reaction on your coverage, and there has been a lot of it, of school situations, especially the end of school now. I mean, you've covered it from the little kids right on up through the high school. So what's your feeling been across the spectrum, if you will?
Yeah, so I'll keep it short, but I have gone to so many different graduations and end-of-the-year things this past couple of weeks, and it's just, I think, jubilation of the conclusion of a hard year, but also the emphasis on resiliency. Every single graduation I have gone to, every single end of the school year, everyone has just said how resilient the students have been. The Gloucester High School, you know, they were in the hot summer sun on Sunday, and they just emphasize the resiliency and how this will prepare the next generation into the working class or into whatever they have next within their journey. And then the middle school having, you know, the eighth graders move on and just saying, you know, you're not done yet. You've got four more years. But just, you know, how this has prepped them for that next step. And I want to say, though, my favorite thing to cover this week was going to Veterans Memorial Elementary School and spending the last day of school with the kids. Paul and I got to go and talk to the teachers and administrators and the students just about, you know, what's it been like to be at Veterans and what does it mean to move on, especially as we know if all things go well for the city, Veterans will be demolished and they will be building a new school there for the combining of East Gloucester and Veterans. And so, you know, I was able to speak with some teachers who have been there 27 years. You know, others had gone to Veterans as an elementary school student and now work there. And some of the kids, you know, I spoke with one student who said, you know, leaving, he's a fifth grade, and he said, you know, leaving feels like the end of the world. And I said, don't worry, you know, you're going to still be around, and the teachers will still be here. And he said, you know, this place has felt like home for the past 6 years.
Yeah.
And so just like what the jolt is, and the thing that I heard time and time again from teachers and students was, it's not about the building. It's really not. It's not about the walls. It's about the dedication of teachers and about the students and the learning environment and the friendships formed. And so, you know, what a great way to end school year with all those positive thoughts. And, you know, what's next for the school building project, who knows? I think it's something that we're going to continue to cover, but that wasn't the narrative of that day. It was more of just a celebration of a year well done and a summer of rest well deserved.
Positive thoughts. Great way to end this conversation, and that is Gloucester Times journalist Taylor Ann Bradford with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.